Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
What makes smartphone cameras so good? Charging stations galore and the farthest photos ever taken. Live from the Twit Studios in beautiful Eastside Petaluma, it's the new screensavers.
Jerry peddling. He's peddling. He's going to keep the show going. Welcome to New Screensavers. If Jerry stops peddling, the whole show goes down.
Yeah, then our teleprompters go away and we don't know what to say.
I'm Leo Laporte.
I'm Megan Maroney.
And my old friend from years gone by. It's so great.
15 years.
Has it been that long?
Well, no. We've known each other for 20 years. 19. 18.
It'll be in May 11th. Will be the 20th anniversary of the start, the founding. You weren't there yet, but
no,
of ZDTV.
There, so maybe 18 years.
This is episode 144 of the new Screensavers.
12 recorded. Times 12.
It's the gross episode.
It's
going to
be gross.
Maybe that's not the best name for it. Recorded Saturday, February 17th, 2018. I'm Leo Laporte, and that's Megan Maroney.
Yes.
Oh,
I
look.
Still am. I
found a pistachio nut in my pocket. Would you like one?
I normally don't eat things out of your pocket. That's something I've learned in the last 18 years since I've known you. Things that you reach into your pocket and give
and
to me.
And also, this is so I know I don't forget my name.
Oh,
yeah, that's nice. I don't know why those two things are in my pocket, but that gives you some idea of what kinds of show it's going to be. We're having a lot of fun on this show. Coming up, what makes smartphone cameras so good? DP Review has done a deep dive on this. We're going to talk to Rishi Sanyal from DP Review to compare the iPhone X and the Pixel 2 and talk about computational photography.
Mm-hmm. And I have been on a search all over the world for the perfect charging station for all my family's charging devices. Mm-hmm. And I'll find it.
Which is the best. Mm-hmm. We had on the show very early on, episode 11. We hadn't even had a dozen shows, let alone a dozen shows. Back in 2015, we saw, I think you probably remember, these amazing images from a Pluto on the New Horizons spacecraft. Well, New Horizons is still out there, and it just sent back some pictures, the farthest camera ever away from Earth ever. Megan talked with Simon B. Porter about the future for New Horizons and these amazing images that's coming up.
And for you Android fans, Jason Howell has an Android app from DuckDuckGo. It's a privacy browser just for you.
No. Oh, Android. Call for help. We've got to have a way to separate your work pictures from your personal photos on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. And we have some mailbag questions, some good apps we found answering your questions.
But first, the top stories of the day.
Or the week.
Yeah, they're not from today, actually. For instance, Google, we found out that Google had made a deal with Getty Images. Getty had been suing Google, saying, your thumbnails in image search make it possible for people to steal our images. Getty Images is a very well-known stock photo agency, and they felt that Google was just kind of aiding and abetting piracy. What we didn't know is what the deal involved. We do now, because if you do a Google image search, used to be a button on the Google image search that said, view image. Let me do an image search of Megan Maroney. Is that a dangerous thing to do or not?
No, not dangerous.
So I'm going to click the images button. There's lots of great pictures of you from the good old days and so forth. So let's look at this fun picture of you. I like this. This is on Twit. And it used to be there was a button here that said view image that let you see the image itself.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Google and Getty say this is part of the deal they made with Getty Images. They got rid of that. You'd actually have to go visit the site where that image came from, the idea being to drive traffic back to the site instead of just kind of lifting the image so somebody could just take it and not see it ever again. Of course, you can always...
And you can right-click it, right?
You can always right-click and say open image in a new tab, and that's not exactly...
But what happens when you open image in a new tab?
Let me see it from this from the search. Let's see if we can right-click.
Because I think
open image in new tab, and then I'm going to go to the tab. So oh, you get the whole page? No, there it is.
Oh, there you go.
So that's the same thing as the view image button, right?
They're just making it one extra step. I think that's great.
I don't have a problem with it.
I think that artists, photographers deserve to not have their artwork just lifted.
Right.
I think there were some headlines in the beginning that said that also the reverse image search was going away, but that's not accurate.
That would be a mixed blessing.
Yeah. So Danny Sullivan, who now works for Google, he's the search liaison, he announced this, and then he confirmed, he was the one that confirmed that it was part of the Getty Images deal, and then someone said, you know, you're also getting rid of the reverse image search. That's how we find out what fake news is. You know, when you see a lot
It's very valuable.
Yeah. When you see a lot of pictures that people are saying, like, oh, I just went to the premiere of Black Panther, and I got, you know, I got kicked in the face by the black youths.
This happened.
Yes.
And she posted on her Twitter a picture of bloody fabric. Mm-hmm. The internet found out, that was 3 years ago.
Right.
Somebody else, you just stole that image. That is useful, that reverse image.
Yes, and that's not going away.
Good.
Danny confirmed that was not going away, that he understands that's important. It's just kind of one extra step before you just steal someone else's artwork.
Yeah. Google is doing something kind of surprising. As of today, Google Chrome, if you update it, will have an ad blocker built into it. I think the best news about this is people worried about getting blocked by Google Chrome, because one of the things Chrome said is if you have a violating ad, an ad that is unacceptable, and there is an acceptable ad policy that they're going to adhere to, we will not only block, and that could be things like an ad that takes over the page and forces you to watch it before you can get to the page, it will be blocked, and any other ads on that page will be blocked. So you'll basically take away all the ads on that page. And as a result, almost every site got rid of all these ads, and now it's a handful of sites that aren't going to have. Basically, they've improved the ecosystem just by this one step. So very few sites will have ads blocked. It'll be pretty much the web as you've been used to it, with ads, just not so annoying, because most sites just said, all right, we get the message.
Well, is this a little self-serving to Google, kind of?
Some of the Google Ad Network ads would be blocked. So you can get ad units. People buy ad units from Google and DoubleClick, and Google owns DoubleClick. Some of those ads would actually not be acceptable and would be blocked by Google Chrome. So I guess that's how they get around that. It's not self-serving. It's not just ads not by Google. It's any ads that are unacceptable. I think this is a good thing. It's a problem in general for publishers. We need ads. We use ads. Every site that's free, it has to have some way of making money. And generally, I think ads are a good choice. But there's the security issues. There's the size of these ads that really can bog down the web. So I think Google's done the right thing to kind of improve the ad ecosystem.
It's not
a real ad blocker.
Well, because I think Google makes a lot of money off of our data and different things. You know, the more we complain about, like, I don't want to see ads, the more they're going to have to, places are going to take our data.
True.
I don't want to see ads I don't want to see, and then they're going to be, taking more information. That's the problem with Facebook. They take all this information so that they can target us with these exact ads.
Well, there's another way to do it. Salon is doing something kind of interesting.
You talked about this on Twit last. This was so interesting.
Yeah. Is it Salon?
Yep, it was Salon.
I don't see it now. So I'm using an ad blocker.
Did they change their mind about it?
Maybe they've backed down. I think the ad blocker's on. Yeah, I'm using uBlock Origin. Last time I tried this, when you went there, you see this. We noticed you're using an ad blocker. We depend on ads to keep our content free for you. Please consider disabling your ad blocker. But if you don't want to, you could also let us run a Monero miner, a cryptocurrency miner, and maybe using your unused computer cycles, you could make a little money. Maybe I've approved it. Maybe that's why I'm not seeing it anymore.
And this is problematic for a lot of reasons, right?
Well, it's funny. Steve Gibson and I have been talking about this. When we first heard about people doing it, they're using JavaScript code from CoinHive. The first time we heard about it, we thought, well, that's kind of interesting. You don't use all of your CPU cycles. It's not like it's going to stick around after you leave the page. You're reading the page. Maybe take a few extra cycles. Make some Bitcoin, or in this case, Monero, another cryptocurrency on the side. And if they can make some money, maybe it's not all bad. But the problem is, of course, it was immediately misused. People have made the CoinHive crypto miner persistent. So even after you left the website, it would continue to mine. There's money in it, right? And I think that it's been so misused now that I think it's probably not a good idea. We'll see what Solana does. I don't necessarily mind that because I'm not using it. It's not going to use an appreciable amount of power. It's not going to bring your system to its knees. In theory, it would just take a few extra cycles. You're reading an article? That seems fair enough.
But maybe you want to use them for SETI at home to find extra.
Actually, be interesting if SETI or others maybe helped monetize doing that as well. Might be a little bit less unappealing. Everybody's getting a cryptocurrency. Do you see Atari now has a cryptocurrency? And not only does that, the stock spiked 60%. All you have to do is like the Long Island Iced Tea Company. they just renamed themselves the Long Island Blockchain Company, and now their stock went up 400%.
The new Screensavers Blockchain is what we should call
it. Obviously, we're in the wrong business. It's crazy. It's crazy. I really am excited about this. We've got on the line with us from DP Review, Rishi Sanyal. He is obviously a great photographer, but also a reviewer at DP Review. And he has taken a look at smartphone photography. Rishi, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Rishi. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
These images are very interesting. I guess we could kick off by saying, all right, which is better, the Pixel 2 XL or the iPhone 10?
I don't want to take sides. They each have their strengths.
So it's not like you could say this one is head and shoulders above that one.
For certain purposes, one is probably better than the other. We recently published our review of the Google Pixel 2 as well as the iPhone 10, and we did call the Google Pixel 2 the best smartphone for stills photographers because some of the computational approaches it uses are just amazing, and it allows it to catch up to traditional cameras, if not exceed them in certain ways. Apple is also doing an amazing job pushing the entire field forward with a wide color gamut photography and high dynamic range photography. So they each have their strengths, and hopefully we can talk a little bit about what makes them great.
Let's actually go back one shot. Let's look at that picture. This is your daughter, beautiful daughter. It's Kira.
Thank you. Kira.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And this is
a Pixel 2 XL, right?
Yes.
But there's something interesting going on here.
You're absolutely right. So I'm focused on my daughter, Kira. That's the nearest person. That's what the phone focused on. But funny enough, her nanny behind her is also in focus. But meanwhile, her nanny's arm is out of focus. So this is a little funny example because this is a computational approach, and the Pixel 2 generates a depth map from its dual pixel array, which actually sees two different perspectives from behind one lens. And from that, it has some stereo disparity from which it can calculate what's behind and what's in front of and how far behind and in front of the focus plane any object is. And it combines that depth map with some understanding of what's in the scene. So it analyzes the scene and finds faces and human subjects and tries to keep human subjects in focus. So in that case, it's funny because it chose to keep both the my baby and the nanny in focus, but apply a very like F2 or so equivalent level of shallow depth of field to everything else in the scene. And that actually speaks to something really cool about these computational approaches, because you can exceed traditional optical methods and enhance them. For example, if you shoot with an f1.2 lens at 85 millimeter, you know, you might get my one eye in focus, but then my other eye will be out of focus, my ear will be out of focus even more. But with these computational approaches, you can just say, you know what, I'm going to have extended depth of focus for the entire face, but then use an optically accurate blur for everything else in the scene, down to even f1.0. You can simulate crazy, crazy F numbers and crazy amounts of blur.
So we call that the bokeh in the background, the blurry part in the background. That's entirely simulated?
That is. So these, if you go forward a little, those images are a little funny. It's simulated, but it's also optically accurate, because what it's doing is it's building a heat map, which is, I think you pulled that image up earlier, where you saw this red and blue representation of the person and the stuff around her. So that heat map, yeah, there you go. So the redder it is, the darker red it is, the more out of focus and behind the focus plane the object is. And if you see some of the blue in the front at the bottom of the image, that's actually telling it to blur, and it's in front of the focus plane. So these computational techniques can figure out if an object is behind and how far behind, or in front and how far in front of the focus plane, the focused object any object is. And all it does is, it's fascinating, once it has this heat map, it then just replaces every pixel with a circle, basically a disc of the same color and brightness as that pixel. And that's why it looks, it pretty much looks,
it's, it looks like it's bokeh. Optically accurate. Yeah. Oh my God. So that's normally created by the shutters, but yeah. Computationally, that's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
It can give you weird effects like that arm being out of focus, but it is, you do want to see the nanny and you want to see the two faces. So it kind of, it's doing something intelligent, but that's the difference between a human who might choose to make that stuff in focus and a camera, a computer. It doesn't know exactly which is which, but it's doing a surprisingly good job. Didn't Apple invent this with portrait mode though? Isn't this Apple's technology?
It's not quite invented by Apple. A lot of people have been doing it using different approaches, like dual lenses. Basically, you need two separate perspectives. So you can either do it using two lenses, or you can do it using one lens, but split pixels behind that lens that can see two different perspectives. So if you see in this image, the two photodiodes at the bottom here, they actually see slightly different perspectives behind the lens. There's actually an animated GIF. It's a black and white image. There you go. So if you look all the way on the right, if you look at the background behind the girl's face, you'll actually see it shifting up and down.
Oh, yeah.
But her face is actually not. So basically, this is actually showing you what the subpixels are seeing. So when something is in focus, there's not much disparity. But when something's far away from the focus plane, there's more disparity. And so it uses that information to build a depth map. You can actually just try this yourself by holding two fingers in front of you, focus on one finger, then just blink your left and right eyes, and you'll see that the finger that is out of focus, that you're not focusing on, moves left and right as you blink your eye. If you move it behind the finger in focus, it'll move in the opposite direction as you blink left and right.
Yeah, but so your eyes are 4 inches apart. These pixels, how far apart are these pixels?
That's a very good point. On the Pixel 2, it's less than a 1 millimeter disparity.
Holy cow.
So, but from that, it's still able to build a depth map by... they use this technique where they look at the disparity, but then they sort of upscale and generate a higher resolution depth map than you would normally get from just that small disparity. And as you can see from the results, it's sometimes better than a dual lens approach, because one of the problems with the dual lens approach is when you have two lenses very far away, if they see two different things, there can be a mismatch, and that can cause confusion.
So one of the differences between the Pixel 2 and the iPhone 10 is that you can adjust the Pixel 2 photos after, right? I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
The bokeh, or
yeah,
just
the bokeh.
Generally?
Yeah, you can adjust the bokeh effect to make it less or more after, or can you do that with both now?
So actually, you can do that with the iPhone 10 and third-party apps with the iPhone 10, because the iPhone makes the depth map that they build available to third-party apps. So there's a cool app called Focos, F-O-C-O-S, which allows you to simulate an f1.0 equivalent blur. Or you can even simulate, do you guys know Lens Babies?
Yes. You know, those, like, that's
yeah,
good.
You can even simulate funny effects like swirly bokeh or like onion ring bokeh. There's all sorts of things you can do computationally by having that depth map. Google right now has made some of their approaches like HDR Plus available to third-party apps using their Visual Core. It's an actual chip built into the phone so that other apps can take advantage of the HDR Plus algorithm that Google Pixel uses, which we should talk about because it's what makes that camera catch up to traditional cameras. But right now, there aren't that many third-party apps that can change the focus right now on the Pixel 2.
Ironically, Google did not use in its own camera app that special visual processor. We learned that just recently. Ron Amadio got a note, and they said, Google said, oh, yeah, we didn't use it in our camera. We didn't need to in our camera app.
We didn't need to. Yeah, exactly. It's fast enough. Kind of funny.
It's bizarre because you don't put a chip in not to use it.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I don't understand that at all.
Waiting for the next phone?
I'm fairly certain they'll use it at some point for some purposes.
So,
but Yeah, good.
I've noticed that with the Pixel 2...
Which you're using for the first time because you did the swap with
Jason Howell. Right. I normally use an iPhone 10, and I've used an 8 and 7 and all of them. But I've noticed that the color of people's faces is a little different with the Pixel. Just a little greenish. Can you talk about that?
I actually noticed the same thing. There's some work to be done in the color science on the Pixel phones, as well as the auto white balancing. It's very... the auto white balance is almost so good that it sometimes neutralizes the color cast that we actually want to keep, whereas the iPhone tends to... swing towards warmer tones. So sometimes the Pixel 2 can lead to cooler. That's an iPhone image, and you have a nice warm skin tones. But if you go to the next image, sometimes the skin tones end up being a little bluish, cool, and greenish. Especially the darker the skin tone is what we noticed. So, but that's something that can just. The funny thing about all these cameras on the smartphones is that every single firmware update can totally change the performance of the camera, which is something that. You know, we're not used to with traditional cameras. So you can see performance accelerate just by a simple firmware update.
So one of the things also that Apple touted was different skin colors. Darker skin colors are still, like, pop in the photos. Is that something that Google has also promised in their phone?
They do a lot of context-sensitive decisions. So both phones will break down the image into its components and figure out how to process the colors and lighting for a person versus the background, things like that. So they just do things a little differently, and they're constantly evolving. Apple has this wonderful thing called portrait lighting or portrait relighting. If you pull up the picture of a picture of my daughter Kira on a couch.
This is my favorite. It's beautiful.
Oh,
it's amazing. It looks like it was taken. It looks like it was taken not just with a real camera, but also lit interestingly. And so what Apple does is it actually analyzes the image, finds a face, builds a 3D map of it, and then tries to highlight the nose, the cheeks, the chin, and create like interesting lighting. Mm-hmm. This image actually shows you the in gray is all the areas where Apple is actually starting to use colors that most other devices have not traditionally used, because we have displays now that can display what's known as wide color gamut. So basically, this is in the P3 color space, which is what Hollywood has adopted as the new color space for movies. So basically, Apple's new devices can capture and represent and show colors that most other devices can't. And the gray shows you what some of those colors are. But you'd have to have a wide gamut device to actually see those colors. But they're coming. All OLED displays are wide gamut. And Apple is leading the field here and being showing the saturation in colors while maintaining color accuracy, which is a really, really important thing.
What about printing these photos? Are they best? Do they look best on the iPhone screen or on the Pixel screen? Or how are they when you print them?
That's a great question, because what they've done is they've optimized the sharpening and noise reduction for the screens themselves. So they actually use a lot of large radius sharpening. And when you look at them on traditional displays that are not Retina, they seem to sometimes look over sharpened. And when you go to print them, it's actually the sharpening is actually pretty good for print. But what ends up happening is these displays on these devices now are just, they're just so good and they're so bright and they can show so much color that they actually exceed what prints can show. And so a lot of people end up being disappointed when they print, because prints can only get so bright. They have to be lit, right? And so the dynamic range of these displays are so high that prints end up being somewhat disappointing. And the dynamic range of this, especially the iPhone X, is actually the reason why Apple is the only company, this is the first product in the world which has taken HDR, not HDR as you traditionally think about it, which is darkening the skies and brightening the shadows for HDR photos. This is actually doing something a little different. It takes the HDR capture and it then tries to re-expand it to have large contrast, so it's closer to the real world. And so we've seen this in the video world. I don't know if you heard about HDR video, like Dolby Vision and HDR 10. So the video world is going there, but this is the first device that will actually do HDR display of HDR photos. And that's a really, really cool thing that Apple's pushing forward.
And so are you seeing a lot of photographers who are now preferring to use the iPhone or the Pixel versus a regular camera?
Absolutely. I mean, I just went on vacation to Mexico the other day and I took my A7 R3 full-frame camera, 28 millimeter lens and 55 millimeter f1.8 lens. But the iPhone here has two lenses on it. One is 28 millimeter, the other is 55. So it's almost the same without me having to change lenses. Now, when light levels drop, the advantages of a larger sensor are still apparent, and especially focus. But even there, we're seeing cameras, especially with the Pixel 2, catch up because, well, if you take a look at the focus speed of this thing, this uses dual pixel autofocus. Mm-hmm. If you just look at how fast it focuses, I don't know if you can see this, mm-hmm. between my hand, background, hand, background. I mean, it's just nearly instantaneous. So it can actually focus on running toddlers even. So the autofocus, and this even works in low light, and it's because it can use the entire sensor for autofocus. And it also has this thing called HDR Plus where it's constantly capturing 9 frames all the time. So when you press the shutter button, the Pixel 2 actually goes back in time 9 frames and then picks them, aligns them all and averages them to simulate the image quality of a sensor 9 times its size, which means it can actually compete with Micro Four Thirds camera image quality. Mm. Because it's capturing 9 times as much light, which means it's capturing as much light as a Micro Four Thirds camera. So it's kind of insane.
Is there a winner when it... This is interesting. These are your camera charts.
Yes.
And look at this closely, because one of these is shot with a Micro Four Thirds system. Mm-hmm. And one of them is shot with what, the iPhone or the Pixel 2?
Pixel 2. And even if you zoom in,
The clarity, so how do they do that? I mean, this is, in a way, you could say computational photography was just responding to the necessity of having very small, kind of junky, frankly, sensors on cameras and trying to get them to look better. But at this point, it looks to me, and I think this was your conclusion, that you actually, on a Pixel 2 XL, are getting resolution comparable to a Micro Four Thirds lens. That's a lot bigger sensor.
Which is which?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Resolution and noise performance, and even sometimes more dynamic range because it's doing that 9-frame image averaging. So they're trying to make up, exactly as you said, they're trying to make up for the small sensor size by using computational approaches. So in this case, it's all about how much light you captured. So larger sensors, full-frame sensors, they perform better because they capture more light, which means they have lower what's known as shot noise or statistical noise. But you can do the same thing by just capturing multiple frames and averaging them. The trouble there, though, is that when you capture multiple frames, you know, what if there's a subject moving,
right?
But the Pixel 2 actually takes those 9 frames, breaks each frame up into thousands of little small tiles, and then aligns each individual tile. So if something moved from here to here and it's not blurry in either image, it'll actually take this object moved here and move it back here and align it. And then average it. And once you average it, you actually simulate a larger sensor. And that's exactly why it's able to catch up.
Yeah.
And it does it, like, instantaneously.
Is one of these two cameras, the iPhone 10 or the Pixel 2 XL, a winner in low light? Because that is always the hardest thing. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, in low light, the Pixel 2 is a winner because what the iPhone does is it drops to a very slow shutter speed, like 1/4 of a second, to capture more light. But then, I mean, 1/4 of a second, no one
can
stay still.
Yeah.
You can barely handhold it, plus, you know, subjects can't stay still. Whereas the Pixel 2 will rarely drop below 1/30 of a second. But since it averages 9 frames, that's almost, in the photography world, we call it about 3 1/3 stops of extra advantage.
Amazing.
So it's taking those 1/30 of a second exposures and then just averaging them together to not have motion blur, but still get the advantage of as if you shot a long shutter speed.
On the other hand, the iPhone 10 has this. I've been playing with this focus app you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You couldn't do this on a Pixel 2, right? Because this is taking imaging information that only the iPhone captures, or no?
So there's no reason you couldn't, theoretically. It's just that right now that depth map has not been made available to third-party apps.
So Google does have that depth map.
Yes.
This is remarkable. You can go from... can you pick this up, Anthony? Yeah, let me just... This is an F20. This is, in effect... Let me make sure I'm screen mirroring over to Anthony. He's got a program running. So this is an F20... shot of my wife Lisa in a lamp store, and it's not a great shot because it's so busy behind her, but I can slide this all the way over to f1.4 and completely. But not only that, I can then choose she's wearing a crown, which you wouldn't see before. I can then choose the lens I'm going to be using. I can choose even what bokeh You can choose from bokeh. Now, tell me what this is, because this is wild. I can also move the back bokeh.
So that's actually showing you a representation of that depth map. So it's kind of like it's a different way of visualizing that heat map that I showed you earlier.
Is that wild or what?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So now I can choose and I can say, okay, that's her face. I want to have the depth map. You know, I want to have everything but that in back bokeh. This app blows me away, but not so much because it's a great app, which it is. Look, you can change the kind of bokeh. You can have
exactly.
I mean,
you can even simulate an STF lens. Do you remember STF lenses that have really smooth bokeh?
Yes.
Gaussian.
Yes.
You can actually simulate that.
You can have an Otis. You can have a freaking Otis lens here, a Zeiss Otis lens. This is mind-boggling.
Or a lens baby, if you really like those weird onion ring bokeh. You can do anything. And that's something that's going to be coming down the road for all these computational devices, because that's what you can do after the fact. You can refocus. I'm sure you're familiar with Lytro. These tiny devices are now doing what Lytro was doing back in the day.
With one. So this is a good example. But this is available on the iPhone, but you're saying that kind of image information is available on the Pixel 2 if Google would just make it available to third parties.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will. Yeah. And especially if they've made HDR Plus available.
Right.
And especially, I can't wait to see HDR Plus in RAW. That would be really cool, because as these cameras are getting really good, even like pro photographers and enthusiast photographers are going to want to use them. And at that point, some people want to work with RAW. And there's no reason why you can't align all those 9 images and then provide a RAW file that allows you to recover even more highlights or shadows. And actually, the Pixel 2 is the first device that I'm aware of that does what we've been asking camera manufacturers to do forever, which is use this what's known as ETTR, or exposed to the right philosophy, which is expose your scene so that the highlights that you care about are as close to clipping, but not actually clipped
to
white.
Right. That's typically how I will shoot, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on the A7R III, it's funny enough, this first camera that if you shoot the A7R III in RAW, but turn on HLG and zebras, it actually gives you an accurate representation of where the clipped pixels are in the RAW file. The Pixel 2 just does it automatically. And that's the thing about these phones. You just push one button, and they will optimize the exposure and then do all the tone mapping in HDR. Take a look at some of those Arizona images I have in that album there of sunset. Those are images where the foreground would be black on any camera.
Right.
But with one button press, you have a perfectly exposed image just out of camera.
It's just the beginning. We're just in the beginning of this stuff. And already, what's great is you have a wonderful head-to-head competition between Apple and Google on this. And they're both pushing each other to get better and better and better. Mm-hmm. Very, very exciting. And it's amazing what Google's able to do with one lens that Apple does with two. You can read all about it in Rishi's review, a DP review, smartphone photography, and more of those images. If you can look at the images, it will really bring it all home to you. And you've done a really great job, I think, of showing what these cameras are doing. You have more than one article, though. This is the Pixel 2 review, right?
This is a shootout between portrait modes on the iPhone 8 Plus and the Google Pixel 2. And then we have the Pixel 2 review as well as the iPhone 10 review separately. And then we have a comparometer, a widget that allows you to compare any camera to any camera. And the phones are in there, too.
And so you can slide it back and forth and look at the...
Yeah, exactly. You can look around the scene 100% or wherever. There you go. Right there shows you. I think that was. You know, this is really interesting because you can see here. Look at the level of detail the Pixel 2 maintains versus a Micro Four Thirds camera. The iPhone 10 doesn't quite have that level of detail because it's not using that image stack as much image stacking as Pixel is using. But you can look around the scene and see where they excel and where one is better than the other compared to different cameras. I mean, as these smartphones get really good, you will want to compare them to even full frame cameras. If you look at the I don't know if you have time, but there's a full frame shot of my wife feeding my daughter with a milk bottle in the photo album, and right next to it is a shot with the Pixel 2. And if you look at the background, there you go.
Wow.
If you look at the background blur, if you go one right, I mean, you can't even. It's kind of hard to tell which one is which.
Which one's which?
Yeah, one has the lens flare.
I like the one on the right.
Yeah.
Is that the camera phone?
That's the Pixel 2, yeah.
Oh, man. And I just bought an A9. Oh, my God.
That's fun.
Yeah. And you can make phone calls with it. So,
and you have a digital assistant that auto-stitches together your favorite memories for you, finds the animated GIFs from your movies. Mm-hmm. It finds the most interesting moments. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
I have to admit, I brought my Sony with me on my last vacation, but I also brought a Pixel 2. Almost all the pictures are Pixel 2. It's just easier, it's faster, and it gets great shots. It's kind of amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it, Rishi. And thank your wife for taking Kira out for a walk.
Thank you so much. It's really been
fun.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Rishi Sanyal is a science editor. What a great title for DP Review at dpreview.com.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rishi.
Up next, we're going to solve my family charging station problems. And before that, I got a chance to talk to Simon Porter. He's an astrophysicist with New Horizons. And we talked about the new images that are coming
back. Talk about photography. Mm-hmm. One.
3 short years ago, we talked to your colleague, Kelsey Singer, research scientist for the New Horizons, about the beautiful photos from Pluto. So just a recap, what did we learn from those New Horizons photos of Pluto?
From the photos, we learned a lot about Pluto, about the surface. All we knew about Pluto before we got there was basically where it was and sort of what color it was, and that, you know, its brightness varied a lot. You know, looking at the surface in close detail, you can actually start to see the processes going on. You can see the big white surface there, that's a sea of frozen nitrogen. Those areas there, that's frozen methane, it makes this sort of nice bladed terrain that we call, as the methane moves across the surface from the equator to the poles and back and forth again. Stuff on Pluto moves around all over the place because of basically its pole points towards the sun. So you get these very strong polar winters.
So tell us now about the new photos that you just processed and just released.
So these new photos are stuff that we're looking at that's, as we drive past them, basically on our way to M69, the next object we're going to go to. M69 is right in the middle of the Kuiper Belt, and along the way, we go through other stuff in the Kuiper Belt. So these are two other objects that we saw along the way. They look kind of like fuzzy blobs, but they're the two closest KBOs that we've been to other than Pluto. And these are kind of more ordinary KBOs. Pluto is the biggest thing in the Kuiper Belt, and these two guys are sort of ordinary. The one on the left, we saw it about half an AU, so about half the distance from the Earth to the Sun. And then the one on the right, we saw it about a third of an AU. Again, it's still a fuzzy blob. But based on how the brightness changes, we can start to figure out what the microphysics on the surface is like. When you see a KBO from the Earth, you only ever see it with the sun at your back. Whereas if driving past with a spacecraft, you see the brightness change. And the brightness changes because of shadowing and because of, how the little shadows on the surface work. And that we can start to figure out what's going on the surface there. Which by itself isn't necessarily all that interesting, but it lets us put what we're going to see for ME69 in perspective.
So KBO, that's Kuiper Belt object?
Yeah, so the Kuiper Belt, it's our second asteroid belt. It's the bigger asteroid belt. You know, when I say close flyby and it's a third of an AU, it's really big. things are very far apart. There's no chance we're going to hit anything very close. The only thing that we're heading towards at the moment is ME69 itself.
So they're 3.79 billion miles away. So that's pretty clear for something that far away.
Yeah, well, for these images, we take about 40 of them and then add them up together. You know, an individual image looks like a pixelated mess. They're 256 by 256 images with a lot of stars in the background. So we have to subtract out the stars and get the one little dot that's moving across, and that's the KBO. So there's a lot of image processing that goes into this.
So how are they getting the photos, and how long does it take to get them back?
So we downlink with NASA's Deep Space Network. So they have a big three 70-meter dishes in California, Australia, and Madrid, Spain. And so they we get them slowly back. Our downlink speed is about 2 kilobits. So that's why we have these reduced size images, just to get them down as quick as we can. And so for these individual images, it took them a couple weeks to get everything down.
So as an astrophysicist, what were your thoughts on Elon Musk launching his Tesla into space last week? I thought it was awesome and also a little bit disturbing that he was just sending a car out there to join all the rest of the space junk. But tell me what you thought of it.
It was great that it worked. Falcon Heavy could be a really useful asset in launching future missions. New Horizons was the fastest one it launched, but it wasn't using a particularly big rocket. It was using an Atlas V. So you could do a mission like New Horizons and launch it actually even faster with something like a Falcon Heavy. So for this sort of research, it's great. They launched it on a trajectory, and then they initially said, oh, no, it's going to the asteroid belt, and then they had to retract that, and it's not going to the asteroid belt. But effectively what they did was make a fake near-Earth object. And it's a potentially hazardous object. I think there's like a 6% chance it's going to hit the Earth within the next million years or something.
Let's hope not. Where's the New Horizons going? I mean, what photos will we see from the New Horizon next?
So the next thing when we turn back on in August, we'll be immediately taking pictures of M69, just what's directly ahead. And that's, we're turning on then because that's the first time we could possibly see it. It's a very, very faint dot, which isn't scientifically interesting, but it's useful for navigation purposes. So we'll be taking navigation pictures of it starting in August, and probably won't really get anything useful until September. And then we'll actually, be guiding in from there. We'll get very, very close pictures of ME69 starting about a week out. And so we'll have a few pictures we download right away. We won't be able to download everything right away from the flyby because it just so happens we'll fly past it at solar conjunction. So basically when ME69 is behind the sun, that happens right after flyby. So we'll get a few pictures down, then we'll have to wait to make sure that we're not pointing the radio dishes at the sun because you can't talk through the sun. And then we'll be able to get the rest of the pictures down. And in the meantime, beforehand, we'll be taking lots more of these close-up images, much, much closer, and we'll hopefully be able to see if some of these are actually binaries. There are a lot of binaries in the Kuiper Belt that, we can't necessarily see from Earth. We can see the bigger ones from Earth. There could be a lot of type binaries out there, too.
So it's sort of like back in the old days when we used to take our roll of Kodak film to the kiosk. We have to wait.
Yeah, it's really slow.
Well, Simon, thank you so much for joining us. Simon Porter is an astrophysicist at Southwest Research Institute in Colorado. He's a research scientist and part of the New Horizons mission. Thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Is it too late to put a Pixel 2 XL on that? Because you'd get much better images, I think.
I think so.
That's really cool.
It is.
I want to see that close-up of MU whatever.
Yeah, you're going to have to wait. Yeah, that's the furthest objects that we've ever seen photographed.
Up close. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we're not that close yet.
So you had a problem.
I have so many problems, but I think I can fix this problem.
Okay.
We have 4 iPads, 5 phones, backup batteries that we need to charge. We have Bluetooth headphones, AirPods, Apple Watches.
And 3 teenagers.
Yes, three. That's the biggest problem.
The most important problem. And you don't want them to go to bed with their phones and their iPads. They'll stay up all night.
We keep them all in our room, in my husband and I's bedroom.
So I love this rule.
Yes, 9:30. It's later on weekends sometimes, including when kids come over at
night. Do they come and they sheepishly hand them over? They go, okay, here.
Usually it's it depends. It's a little bit of...
Is there a struggle sometimes?
Sometimes it's a reminder,
Milo, give me that iPad now!
But, you want them to learn themselves because they'll be out of the house soon and then you won't have the charging station.
There's a place that they come in your bedroom.
Yes, and they put them in there.
Everything's... And it's all there.
Mm-hmm. Everything gets charged.
But initially, that was like a USB hub with lots of wires.
Right, everywhere. And it's hard. Yeah, and it's a mess. And so I want to make it neat. I want to hide the mess.
Yeah.
And so if you look on Amazon, you you'll find dozens and dozens of these.
What are they
charging
called?
Charging stations, family okay. charging stations. They range from like $20. Some are like $500 because they're like institutional charging stations.
I've seen the carts.
Yeah.
Where they roll them around, mm-hmm. the iPad carts and so forth.
And you have to be careful because it often looks like they come with a neat little cords, and they don't, you know, you need short cords often. Sometimes you need long ones, the cables. They don't usually come with them. So here is what I decided. This was my first choice. It's the GUS multi-device charging station. It's made of bamboo, which
I like. It's actually pretty, yeah.
So it can fit the phones go in here.
They don't quite fit in the slots.
Yeah, the big ones are not. Do you have an extra phone?
It should fit an iPhone 10.
Yeah, right? The two plus size phones, and here's what three plus size iPhones look like. They kind of knock into each other. It's not bad. I mean, these don't have cases. This is the Pixel, and they're not on cases, but it's fine if you have three. We have five, but you might have only three. And then you have the iPad.
You might need
fit
two of
here.
These, is what you need.
Yeah, two would be good. So what I really like about this is it's magnetic. So
the guts inside are where the charger lives.
Yeah, so here is where you put a multi, a USB charger.
Is that Velcro so you can glue it in there and it doesn't rattle around?
It's soft. You could, I guess, glue it in there.
It looks like a little Velcro thing for holding it. That's good.
Yeah, it's you can hide the cords underneath here, hide them down they don't
so if you don't have
get
short
all tangled.
Cords,
you yeah, can, yeah, they get, yeah, you yeah. go through here nice. And you go through the edges.
And where do the
here.
Cords go, though?
They go like this.
Oh, I see.
So
there's little holes in the front.
Yeah. So you can, they come out here and then, I have it back. Here's
Do they go into the iPad slot? Is there an opening there for that? Or does it have to go around?
Well, this one doesn't really fit underneath here. That was one of the problems. Like, if it goes like that, it doesn't fit. If it goes like that, it doesn't
really
fit.
It's almost as if they designed these but never really tried them.
Well, some multi-port USB chargers are shorter than the others. You get one but you can just stick it out the back and then this will come out here. And then they come out the side, and so this is fine. I like
this
how it looks.
This will be so much better when everything's wireless, because then you would just have that all be like a charging thing, and
right?
Just put them there.
So yeah, we do have two phones. We have the 10 and the 8 that are both wireless, and those take up more space. Like if you're laying them down, there's not.
Yeah,
that is the other problem with this. This is a temporary solution because you are upgrading our devices all the time.
Right.
So two cows on Twitter.
How much is the bamboo?
This one is $39, okay. So $40.
Okay. It's the Gus.
Yeah, Gus. I don't know what G or U or S stands for, but, and probably
great,
that little.
Useful stuff.
Useful stuff. Oh, thank you. Okay, so then two cows on Twitter saw this, and it was a thrifter deal. Do you follow at thrifter on Twitter? You should. It was originally $45. But I got it for $32. I think you might still be able to. It's called the Leaven, and looks like it's now back to $45.
Is it called the Leaven or just a Leaven?
The
organizer.
Leaven.
The Leaven.
The Leaven makes it sound good.
Yeah.
Here's the pros of this. It's got a power button here, so you can turn it off and on.
Everything,
so if you're, during the day, you don't have to be sucking up power. You can just turn it off.
That's actually a good idea,
10 ports.
Okay.
And it comes with the cable. So first, it has four cables here. And they stretch out, they're retractable.
So the charger's built into this one.
You have four cables here for Android and iPhone. So, this does not fit the Pixel because it's a USB, micro USB, not a USB-C. So it's already a little bit outdated. But, a lot of phones still charge with micro USB. My backup batteries charge with micro USB. A lot of my Bluetooth headphones do.
Sad to say, that's not dead yet.
Yeah, so you can, it's not as well made as I would like it to be.
It's
like
kind
these
of plasticky,
kind of, and unless you get like really good cords, everybody's cheaped out on their USB-C or their Lightning cables and been sorry that you did. But then on this side, you can use your cords
six more ports.
Yeah, six more ports that you can charge. So this is where I charge the Pixel because I can plug in a USB-C cord.
And these are 12-watt ports. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you get 10, 12-watt devices on there. But
So
I guess you could.
This is really handy when the kids have a sleepover. So then you can, because then you have... Like their three phones.
So you make visitors give up their phones.
We do.
As well.
Not
nothing good happens after 9:30 when a bunch of kids are teenagers are together on their phone. I can guarantee it. You remember what it was like.
Yeah.
It's like going outside into the, you know, your parents didn't let you go outside to the park at 9:30. And this does not fit our iPads. It'll fit a Kindle. But our school-issued iPads have the big, thick
cases on them,
and they don't fit in there.
Yeah, these slots seem strangely narrow.
Yeah, so this is good for phones and Kindles.
All right.
So, and then it comes with the extra cable.
And it goes to 11.
Yes, it goes to 11. That is confusing, because there's 10. It doesn't go to 11. There's only 10. Okay, so here is the DIY solution.
This is the Burk.
The Burk.
B-U-R-Q-U.
The Burk. Burk has been working on this problem for me for a while because
This looks like you might be torturing hamsters.
You could, yeah. Or, like, I don't know, you could store eggs in this. This we got at Michael's. It's for files, right?
Oh, it's a rustic file organizer. Yeah, it's a Petaluma file organizer.
Right. Yeah. Metal and wood. We call it rustic farmhouse style, which I like. You can go to Michael's or Office Depot or any place basically and get a file folder thing like this in whatever design you want.
This was from
plastic.
Michael's.
This was $13 at Michael's.
Yeah.
But it did not come with these holes in here. Burk drilled those holes for me.
That's clever. So you put the tablet here. Give me a tablet. We could just try that here. So you put a tablet in here, and then you can just plug this in. Right,
you could
there.
Even put a phone in there, too.
Nice. I mean, these aren't Apple tablets, so they're not going to work with the lightning cables. But that's good. I like
that. You could just,
and a phone even, I guess.
Yep, you can charge. This is a nice anchor cable that I got. I really like the anchor cables, lightning cables.
We like
get those.
Anchor stuff.
And then it's just
this is pretty.
There.
And you could get four or five phones in each slot.
Because, you can put the... Yeah. And then on the back, I'll show you...
You know what? Burk actually has invented something better than any... Look at that.
And he also added one of these cord things.
Look at
I don't know what you call this exactly. John, what do you call this?
It's a cord tie. Yeah.
Cord tie, so you can attach them there.
And you just twist it and it holds it in place. Yeah.
He also experimented with actually gluing one of the multi-port chargers on the back. We have another
makeshift,
so you can do that so it doesn't hang down there.
Yeah.
But it's in the back anyway. You don't see it. So this is my favorite right now, the Burk. He's going to start selling them on Etsy.
No, but you should look at Etsy because I bet there are people doing something like
there
this.
There are all kinds.
But you
of
could easily do that yourself in a craft store,
mm-hmm.
and it might be better to do that because you kind of know what you want, and this wouldn't be difficult to build. In fact, I would make the kids make this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like having them dig their own grave.
That's why it feels taking away their phones
make them
at night.
Make them build this. This is where we're putting your stuff, kid. And then they build it like that. Now, I'm going to show you what I have.
Okay.
And this is great. Mark Spagnuolo made this. He's the wood whisperer. He made this more than 10 years ago. And it's heavy. So I'm going to need Jerry to help me lift this up. This, isn't this gorgeous?
Oh, that is
this
really
is
nice.
Fine woodworking. This is Bazinga wood. No, Babinga wood. African Babinga wood. And spelted maple. Look at that beautiful maple. These are ebony handles. He really did a great job. And inside... Now, I put a power strip in there, but you can see he's got openings for all the cabling. So you could have something behind it, or you could put a power strip in there and then have the cables come up and through. This is too small for tablets. He made this in the pre-tablet era. This was from, I think, 10 years ago, almost exactly 10 years ago. And in fact, you can watch his 12-part series on making this because he's a brilliant woodworker. This is, I don't actually... Use this. There you go. There he is giving it to me when he brought it by the cottage with his wife, Nicole Spagnuolo. Mark's really talented.
That's really nice.
Isn't that beautiful? I actually, and Mark, you'll be happy to hear this. It's still in my house. It's the first thing you see when you come in the front door here. We don't really use it to charge that much. You could, but we don't really use it. It's just such a beautiful work of art, a work of wood. That this is the back, so you can see I haven't dusted it back here.
It's almost 10 years old. It's 10-6. He signed it 10-6-08.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
So.
Yeah. And you can watch him make it, and he has all the plans such as they are. I think it's on the back of a napkin on his website. But thank you, Mark, for this. And I just love this as a piece of art, if nothing else. But it has the principle.
You should start using it.
Couldn't you do a tablet in it, though.
But you could charge your AirPods. You could charge Bluetooth.
A lot of little devices.
Battery. Like backup batteries. That would be a great place for those because then people can grab them.
This used to be my drone battery case.
Oh.
Until the drone.
Then you lost the drone.
Yeah, hit the water.
You need a drone storage.
It's good for that kind of thing, for rechargeable batteries, stuff like that.
That is exactly, I think that,
beautiful?
Except for it doesn't have the iPads. But I like being able to close it. I mean, we talked
about this. That's the nice thing. In the living room, this just looks like a work of art, a nice piece of furniture, kind of an Asian theme. But then when you open it up, you see it's actually got all the electronics inside.
Right. And so you also, by your bedside table, you just drilled holes in the back of your drawer,
that's another thing you can do. And that wasn't a bad idea. You know, if you have an inexpensive bedside table or you don't mind drilling a hole in it, that's exactly what I did. I drilled, so most bedside, you know, that's not a table. It's like a little
nightstand,
right? They have drawers, right? And the back, generally the drawer doesn't go all the way to hit the back. There's a clearance between the back of the nightstand and the drawer. And this is usually thin particle board, nothing too fancy. You can easily take a drill, put a hole in that. So I did put a hole. And actually, I didn't put the cables through that hole. I put the plug through that hole and put the whole charger in the drawer. And the charger has all of these cables attached. So all you really need to do is drill a hole for the power cord. Mm-hmm. That's going to go out behind the nightstand. When you put the phone in the nightstand drawer, connect it all up and close the drawer, there you can't see anything. You can't see wires coming out of it. It worked really well. So actually, that is exactly how I charge almost everything now, is I just put it in my drawer. In fact, I don't know if you were inspired by my tale of this, John, but John's done the same thing in my office here. I have a USB charger in my drawer there, and I just plug in all the cables.
That's smart.
Great minds work alike.
I am very, everything has its place, and that's...
You like it shipshape.
I do, and because otherwise they're just going to end up in the kids' rooms.
Right.
And
No, I think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
And it reduces clutter, and it gets the job done, and more, maybe even more importantly, everything gets charged every night. So, you know, with teenagers, my number one complaint is anytime I see my kids, they say, oh, and bring your charger, because their phones are never charged. Mm-hmm. They're never charged.
Right. Yeah, and then their backup, they use your backup batteries, and then they don't charge those.
Unfortunately, Mark Spagnuolo's Wood Whisperer's cabinet is not for sale. No, I'm not accepting offers. But you could make it yourself if you're a woodworker, or get some ideas from Mark's site, thewoodwhisperer.com. And... you'd have to make this yourself. We don't even have plans for the Burke.
No, just drill holes in the thing.
Channel Burke.
Mm-hmm.
And here's actually...
That was the Burke
this is
box.
You did this on know-how. He actually put this in a giant leather case.
That is great.
Also,
yeah, and he had the big charger, and each one had its own power source. It was amazing.
Why did you take that apart? That's fantastic.
That's your restoration hardware box. And he.
I like it that he cut holes in it in case children get stuck in there.
Also for the cords.
Oh, okay.
But as a child. there's no heads inside that box either.
But, you know, kids might actually want to get stuck in there so they can use their iPad all night.
It's true.
It's always good, just for safety, to have air holes on there.
I want to see what you guys have. So send
pictures.
Yeah, you can use a hashtag. You can at me at Megan Maroney or use hashtag Twit. If you have pictures of your solution, we want to see them because nothing here is perfect, and I need perfect.
I think in a way it speaks to the fact that it's custom. Everybody has unique needs and a unique number of devices and kinds of devices, so you almost have to make something that is specifically for your needs.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do a call for help. What do you say? Let's go back to the radio and say hello to Ben from Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
He's got the Edinburgh University shirt on. You're in the ROTC there. Are you a student?
No, I'm actually I'm the guy in charge of the ROTC program.
Very nice. Was that your son that ducked out of the scene there a moment ago? We saw him. Busted.
Hello, Ben.
Welcome. What can we do for you?
How are you?
She's fine.
So I have a problem. Well, maybe not a problem, but I'm looking for a solution for separating work and family pictures. So I take a lot of pictures on my phone. And so I have Army, you know, work pictures mixed in with personal pictures. So I wonder if there was an app or a way that I could automatically take pictures, whether for work or home, and have them automatically put into... not my camera roll, on my iPhone,
on another folder
or Google Doc, you know, Google Cloud, Dropbox, or anything else.
Can I ask you what you do in the service?
So I'm an Army engineer. And currently, I'm assigned to an ROTC program in Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. So
this is your full-time job, is running the ROTC there?
That is. For the next 2.5 years, that'll be my full-time job.
What
and
fun.
Then I'll go back out into the force and be back in the Army.
Nice. So your pictures are right now of the kids and of the training and the ROTC exercises, things like that. Although
right,
later...
All together.
Yeah.
And you don't want them showing up like in a slideshow or whatever. You don't want the work ones showing up in the family slideshows.
So on my Apple TV, I don't want to have a bunch of soldiers running across my living room.
That's good. Well, so I thought this was a great question, and a lot of people want this.
You actually tweeted it, didn't
I did.
You?
And I think a lot of people were just, you got to separate work. You got to have two phones. But that's not always practical.
No.
Right. At all. So I don't, and we
Besides,
don't.
Have you seen the phones the Army issues? You don't want that phone.
So we don't do that. Either. So, I mean, we take all our personal photos on all of our work
devices.
As you
know, it's all mushed together, right?
So there's a lot. I mean, I think the best way to do this is through an app. And I got a lot of suggestions. Sarah on Twitter says use the Notes app because, you know, you can take photos in the Apple Notes
app. So there are apps that will take photos but not save them to your camera roll.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're getting on your Apple TV is your camera roll.
Right.
But you can use apps, whether from Apple or third parties, that will take pictures. You can look at them in the app, but they never make it in the camera roll unless you explicitly save them.
Right.
And
so,
Apple's Notes is one of them.
Yeah, that's one of them. So you could do that. But then also, that's maybe not so practical. If you want more of a full-functioned camera, you could use an app called Camera Plus.
Camera Plus has always done that. It's one of the things I like about Camera Plus. It's a really great camera app, partly designed, as you know, by Lisa Bettany, who was one of our hosts. She did the Mostly Lisa photo show. And one of the things Lisa did when they designed that is keep your photos that are taken with Camera Plus inside Camera Plus unless you explicitly save them out into the
Okay, so I just took a picture of Alex. And where is that picture? Let's see.
It's okay. You're on a Pixel. I know you don't know how to use it.
No, this is an iPhone. This is Anthony's iPhone because you use an iPhone. So then I just here are all these photos that I just took. I just took that picture of Alex. And then if I go to Anthony's photo roll.
It's not there.
It's not there. It's camera roll. It's not there at all. So
that's the best way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd in effect, you'd have a camera app just for the ROTC.
So, yeah, you just or like you'd have to remember to do it. There's no way there's no. Artificial intelligence yet to know, like, oh, this is a work picture. This is a. I mean, if you were taking it in a certain location, always.
Yeah, I mean, you could look, say, in photos. I only want to see picture. You could create albums, for instance, that I only want to see pictures that are not taken at Edinburgh College. You know, that kind of thing. But that's, I mean, that's kind of artificial. Mm-hmm. You control what albums your Apple TV sees. So you don't have to do, but right. I think I like the idea of just keeping a separate app entirely.
VSCO is another one that does the same.
VSCO, which is another really good camera app, by the way.
I mean, I took some great pictures.
You're not making,
yeah,
I can tell. You're not making any sacrifices by using Camera Plus or VSCO because they're good apps, but they do separate your photos.
And you can also share them. So you know, if I wanted to send that photo to somebody, I could share it.
Please
right
don't
there.
Send that photo to anybody.
I could put it on Facebook. I could tweet it.
And you could save it to your camera roll, which is nice.
Yes, yeah. I could. If there was a work photo that you were like, oh yeah, those are my buddies from work. I want that. Yeah. You can then save that to your camera roll. So.
Yeah. Is that a kitty cat or a dog? I see a tail.
Is up here.
And there's the child. And there's the child. What's your son's name?
This is Owen.
Hi, Owen. How you doing? I bet you're pretty proud of your dad, aren't you? He can't hear a word I'm saying.
All right. He can't hear.
So there you go, Ben. Thank you so much for the question. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the help.
Great to talk to you. Keep up the good work in Edinburgh. Is it
you.
Edinburgh? Am I saying it wrong?
Edinburgh.
Like Scotland, except not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like, yep.
Okay.
Just not.
Nice to meet you, Ben. Take care.
Pleasure. Thank you, Leo.
All righty. And thanks for your service. Those kids, I'm sure, appreciate it. You know, it's hard. We're working under difficult circumstances because, of course, of the school shootings a couple of days ago. And the thing that I think of when I hear ROTC is that ROTC kid who, well, I don't want to go into it, but anyway, it's great work. Thank you for doing
that
work. We appreciate it. Next week, Ian Thompson is our co-host. If you've got a question you'd like to ask on the show, we'd love to have you. Here's how you participate.
Need tech help?
The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
The mailbag is coming up. We got more questions. I'm on a roll. Maybe I'll answer another one. Who knows? But first, Jason Howell has a new app that can help you protect your privacy.
Safe browsing has crossed over from something used only by people donning tinfoil hats over to the mainstream, and most people seem to understand the power of their data and the potential for its abuse if they don't protect themselves. The privacy-focused search engine called DuckDuckGo has long been a pioneer in offering a completely anonymous and untracked web search experience. And the company just updated their apps and extensions for pretty much all platforms, and that they'd expanded on their feature set inside of these apps in ways that will further protect you from all the bad stuff. So let's take a look at the updated Android app to see what's on offer. The app itself is super straightforward. It's about as simple as it gets, actually. It's protected. It's a safe browsing environment, as you see here. You just enter the name or the URL that you want to search in the search field, and then you hit go. And that's what DuckDuckGo has always provided in their app. Now, though, when you click through to a site within the app, up next to the URL bar is listed a letter grade. That gives you a quick glance at the security grade that they've given to a particular site. So you can click that letter, actually, and that's going to show a relatively comprehensive rundown of how the site scored, how it got that letter grade, and what went into it from the ground up. If I go to archive.org, for example, within DuckDuckGo, I'm shown the site has a B letter rating. Diving in, I can see that the connection is encrypted. That's great. It actually has zero trackers built into the site, which is awesome. That's what you hope for anyways. If there were any trackers on this site, the new DuckDuckGo app will automatically block those for you too. So it's doing a lot of the hard work without you needing to lift a finger. Finally, it docks archive.org a grade here. So it's not getting an A, it's getting a B due to unknown privacy practices. This is actually pulled from TOSDR.org, or Terms of Service Didn't Read. That service actually tracks the history and stated privacy practices of sites. If a site is known to have stated its practices in the past, this would get a pass, let's say. Finally, once I'm done with my browsing session, I can just tap that fire button up top, and this is pretty satisfying. You see that little animation that allows me to clear all of my browsing data and start over. None of it's stored on the device. And with that, all traces are gone. DuckDuckGo has created a really nice looking and minimal, where it needs to be, private browsing app. And best of all, it's free. I love it when it works out like that. I'm Jason Howell. You can catch me with reviews like these every Tuesday on All About Android, or just chatting with people making and breaking tech news each week with Megan Maroney on Tech News Weekly here on twit.tv.
You're both DuckDuckGo fans, because you were talking about DuckDuckGo on iOS today, like how you like that as a search engine.
Right. I mean, I feel like privacy is like eating your broccoli. It's not easy, but I think it's something that we should do to stay healthy.
I never eat broccoli. Does that mean I don't care about privacy?
Well, you do other things. Like, you fast. You don't like fasting. I don't like not using Google. I'd rather use Google. It's faster and better. But
so I use Google.
Well, I don't know. Who knows the future? It's getting dangerous out there. They're creating.
What's Google going to do? Come knock on your door?
Who knows what that data? Who knows who they're going to give that data to?
No, you're right. It's got to the point that they know an awful lot about us, and the ability to combine those databases to derive more information. But I still have a hard time figuring out, you know, what's the nightmare scenario? What's the nightmare scenario to you?
That they turn over the information to the government, that we have a hostile government, that that information is no longer...
So my position is, if we have a hostile government, we're screwed in so many ways. If the government has decided, you're right, I mean, that information could be used against you. They could trump up a case, if you forgive the phrase. But I think that that's like Black Mirror nightmare scenario. It's not likely.
But, I mean, think about all the Black Mirror scenarios you wouldn't have expected, that you'd see people, like...
But you're planning for something that's... I mean, I would. You're giving up a lot of convenience for something that's seems highly unlikely. And if we were in a scenario like that, we'd probably be living in an underground bunker. Or, I mean, it's What's something that's like going to happen like in the real world is I guess what I'm asking.
Yeah, I'm not giving up Google, and I'm using the Android phone. So I'm just saying it's more
easy to imagine nightmare scenarios.
How likely are they? And I don't want to live in a state of anxiety of my privacy, but it's important to understand what these corporations are doing with our data.
Mostly they're selling ads.
They're often creating profiles of us. We've talked about this before.
So they can sell ads.
Right. Like a profile like you're an anxious person or you're bipolar and so we're going to sell you that ad. Like, don't you feel a little worse about that? Like the kind of ads that they're trying to sell based on all of this compilation?
Well, it is one of the reasons I'm not as big a fan of Facebook. I think Facebook probably is doing things like that. But it doesn't, again... Not really. Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't even see the ads. Do you see the ads?
I don't think most of us do.
I think the ads don't work.
I've definitely bought things based on like...
Instagram ads,
yes.
I see.
Yeah. So, well, what about...
That's not the end of the world that you bought something because they took advantage of your fragile emotional state and they made you buy some sort of weird device for... Court organization. It's not like it's not like life is over.
They did.
Then the other one that people often bring up, Dvorak used to bring up all the time. Wow, what if insurance companies now start monitoring how many donuts you eat and they deny you insurance? And the answer is they're never going to do that. They don't do that. What they do is they ask you if you've ever gotten life insurance or health. They ask you, do you eat a lot of donuts? And if you say yes, they can't take that into consideration. If you say no, if you're hiding your donut consumption, and then you make a claim. They say, well, no, you have been eating donuts, so we're going to deny you that claim. So I'm just saying the insurance companies ask you this stuff outright. They don't need to sneak around behind your back
and
find out if you're eating donuts. They just say, do you eat a lot of donuts? What's your weight? What's your blood pressure? What's your blood sugar? Do you smoke?
Okay, what about this nightmare scenario?
Come up with more.
What if the election in the United States might have been affected due to certain news that was shown to people from
Facebook?
That would
never happen. That's crazy talk. All right, let's get to our mailbag. Roll it in, ladies and gentlemen. Well, gentlemen, anyway, if you would call him that. Look, you left some of your cords lying around.
This is how I feel right now about technology.
All tied up. Pick a email there. Actually, the truth is, even the election tampering, they didn't need to know anything about you, did they? Or maybe they did.
I don't think that I was shown. I don't.
You
think
weren't seeing some ads that other people.
No, I don't think so.
Like, dark
I don't
ads think, are a problem.
I think. Well, and news, negative fake news about Hillary Clinton or positive.
But
fake
this is
news
easy
about,
to solve. We have those restrictions. You know, when you see an election campaign ad on TV or radio, it says who it's paid for by. And for some reason, I never understand. They don't require that at digital media. Who paid for that? Oh, the Internet Research Agency. Oh, okay.
Right.
Email one is yours.
Okay. I have a new Samsung 4K TV and an old iPhone 6 Plus. How can I mirror my iPhone screen on the TV? Samsung says that it doesn't have this feature. There must be a safe app out there in cyberspace to provide this option. I look forward to any help. Sincerely, Wes.
Well, the reason it's important what Samsung says is because the TV does have to have some hardware along those lines. Samsung supports a technology called DLNA, as I remember, which Windows machines can use to cast to a Samsung TV. But I don't think that they support Apple's native casting, which is called AirPlay. So you need to buy a physical hardware device like an Apple TV to do that, right? That would do it?
Yeah, so you can get an old one for cheap or get a new one.
You don't need the 4K one for that.
Yeah, but I mean, if you want to upgrade, if that's something that you want for other reasons, because you want to look at your photos, they make it really easy to look at all of your photos in iCloud.
This is how Apple gets you into their ecosystem, though, right?
Yeah.
You start with the iPhone, and then, you need an Apple Watch, you need an Apple TV, you need a MacBook,
You need an AirPod.
You need an iPod.
You need all the pods and all the eyes. Everything that starts with I and ends with pod, you need it.
$149. Somebody suggested, this is true, a cable, lightning to HDMI. Apple makes that. You can go to the Apple shop and then physically connect your iPhone to the TV. That would work. It's not convenient, but it would work.
It depends on what he wants to do. Like if he just wants to watch Netflix or YouTube, then Chromecast. That's $35.
Yeah. That's cheap.
And some apps, Chromecast.
So the app has to support it. It has to have a Chromecast button in the app, but many apps do. Yeah, you're right. If you just wanted to watch video, for sure.
And we found a more complicated app that we've been going back and forth about not mentioning.
Yeah, let's not mention it.
Okay.
I really like this app, but it's called A Power Mirror, and Anthony bought it, but it's expensive, right? It's how much? $10 a month?
$12 a month.
Oh, my
gosh. And it requires a computer as well.
So basically you're streaming to the computer, not your TV.
Your AirPlay basically to the computer, or mirror to the computer. And then, but you can do three phones at once, which we tried earlier.
That was really cool. This is aimed at people like us for television production and stuff like that.
Right, because we spent a lot of time airplaying us doing Snapchat filters onto the screen. Which
so much fun.
Super useful.
That's called A Power Mirror, and that's a Mac app. You get that in the App Store.
Yeah.
But it's not going to solve his Samsung TV problem.
Well, he could do... Oh, so he can't get the computer to then the Samsung TV?
Well...
What, with an HDMI cable?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
We should talk about that on iOS today, though. Let's demo this app on iOS today.
I like
today.
That app.
So
yeah.
You got to watch iOS today.
From Bob comes our second question. This is a Twitter question. At Megan Maroney, do you find the HomePod too boomy at low volume? I feel that Apple tuned this like Beats.
I couldn't answer Bob's question because, as we discovered when we reviewed the HomePod on iOS today, all music sounds the same to my delicate ears.
So it depends what you mean by boomy. This is kind of the problem with describing audio, is it's very kind of subjective. And it's like describing wine, you know. Is that fruity or minerally to you? Does it taste like tobacco? Is it chewy? And these are all words that you learn. I guess you kind of learn. Boomy to me means that. So they sometimes talk about bass being tight, where it's solid, and sometimes they talk about like it's in a big room, like a room is boomy, is echoey, and so that would be, for instance, a way to describe the bass sound. I would say that actually the HomePod's bass is quite tight. It is precise. It's accurate. It's not boomy. In the sense that it sounds echoey or overly loud, or sometimes I use the word tubby. It sounds like it's a tub, like in a galvanized tub. Those words are meant to kind of evoke a sound in your mind. I don't know how. I would say that the Apple HomePod is, and we've seen now measurements on Reddit, for instance, is very accurate. They do apply a loudness curve, and this might be what you're talking about. It's called the Fletcher-Munson curve. At normal volumes, the human ear hears the voice, the mid-range, better, as you might expect, so we can converse. And the high ends and the low ends are attenuated. They're reduced somewhat. So the loudness curve, and sometimes you've seen this in old stereos, and there was a loudness button. It bumps up the bass sound at around, I think it's around 100 to 500 hertz. And then it bumps up the high end, I think around 10 or 11K. And if you have a stereo with a loudness button, or you have a sound program with EQ, and you did that, you'd see that sounded more satisfying. It's not more accurate. And the problem sometimes audio people have with this is, well, but what if the guy making the record mixed it, knowing this, and mixed it that way? Now you're going to amplify his already amplified loudness. Wouldn't you like to be able to tune it yourself with an equalizer and that kind of thing? I think if you buy the HomePod, you're basically saying, I want it the way Apple decided. Did Apple do it to make Apple Music sound great? Well, Apple Music has classical music. They have jazz. They have folk. They have rock. They have pop. If anything, it's probably the case that when they designed the HomePod, they thought about pop music sounding great, because that's what most people listen to. But having listened to it, do you listen to classical music on yours?
I do.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sounds really good. All I would say is it sounds good for a speaker that size.
Mm-hmm.
It's a single speaker, so you don't get stereo. You don't get good stereo separation. It's small, 4-inch woofer, so you don't get big, deep bass, but you get quality bass for a speaker that size. I think it's as good as any speaker that size, maybe better than most. So it's a good speaker. It's not going to reach. Here's what I've been saying lately. You see if you agree with this. There is a move afoot. I think a lot of this, just the nature of our lives, to listen to music as wallpaper. It's decorative. You go, Vegas is where it makes me think of Vegas. You can't go anywhere in Vegas without music playing in the background, mm-hmm. everywhere. Casinos, restaurants, everywhere, constantly. Right?
Like elevator music, it's like, everywhere.
It's almost like, it's like elevator music, except it's mostly real pop music. But it's not there for you to listen to. You're not going to say, oh, let me listen to that song. No, it's background music. It's wallpaper. It is like elevator music. It's wallpaper. It's to create a mood, to make you happy. For people who want wallpaper, they want to be in the kitchen and have music going on, the HomePod is great. It's a great choice. You can move around anywhere. But if you're serious about music and you want to sit down and listen to a song or listen to a record, you want to enjoy it and focus on it, it's not a good choice. You're not going to sit in front of the HomePod and listen to it. It's not a good choice for that. You should get a stereo with two speakers, and you don't have to spend a lot of money, but you'll get a much more nuanced, better sound out of that than you could get out of a single toilet paper roll size device. It's for music as wallpaper. It's not for music for listening to.
You know what else you get from the HomePod?
What?
Rings on your wood table.
Do you put it on a wood table?
Have
you
had that happen? I did, yeah. I have.
Did you have it happen?
I had it happen, yeah.
Wow, everybody's saying this.
Yeah, there's the hole. You can see the...
Oh, that's terrible.
I know. And so everybody said this. The Sonos does this too.
It's the silicone.
And it's like I had it up really loud because I just wanted to listen to it loud, and then it did that. But I had it on a different table, and it didn't do that. So I...
Now, Apple says it will go away over time, and you should oil the table with a wood oil recommended by the manufacturer. Have you tried that?
No. I put it on books instead. I just covered up the ring. I put it on.
I put my HomePod where everybody should put their HomePod, on top of the Sonos speaker. That's where it belongs.
So,
and it does not mar Sonos speakers, I'm proud to say.
But I love that this has created, like, Pat and Quill has a Sonos coaster. You can spend it at $20.
I should point out, you said the Sonos does it, and the Google Home Max comes with a silicone pad. I bet you it doesn't do that?
Oh.
It doesn't?
It does. I was just
kidding. Is it leaching something out of the silicone that's modifying the wood? What is happening here?
The vibrating, because I think it is, as if you turn it up loud, then it, vibrates more. And it
you don't want it on a doily. Because Apple says you want it on a hard surface.
So is a book okay? I have it on three books.
I think it sounds better if it's on a hard surface. So Formica, granite would be a good choice. Granite would sound good.
I did see someone else on Twitter was making a little stand, a little metal stand. So there's the coaster.
I don't know if a leather coaster is the right choice. By the way, that was easy for them to make because whenever you make leather products, there's always leftover leather.
Yeah.
When I get shoes from my shoe store, it comes with a bunch of leather coasters because it's just leftover from making the shoes. Pat and Quill said, yes, there's somebody who will buy these. Yes.
What about like a cork coaster?
I think not. I think you want it on a hard surface.
Hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I'm not sure leather would be even good. I think you want something. Buy a granite, petrified wood.
Mm.
They're just the right size.
Petrified.
I'm going to go get some petrified wood and sell it as Apple HomePod coasters.
Mm-hmm.
That'd
great
be
idea.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Sound right. It is a weird thing that Apple didn't know about that when it came out, but I don't think it's the end of the world. There you go. That's your
books.
That's
where I have it on top of my books.
Are you happy with your HomePod? Do you love it?
I do, yeah. I don't really... I need... Because I also have the Echo Show, and so I feel like one needs to go, maybe.
It is nice. Here we go. This is what I use.
Oh.
That's God, great. This is heavy.
That's an umbrella stand?
Yeah. You know... Oh, boy.
A 45 record, Beef Team says. That's a good idea. I have a lot of those.
I think books are probably fine.
Yeah. I do.
You like the sound of it?
I do like the sound of it.
I love to be able to talk to my... If you're going to have music as wallpaper, the ability to say, now let's hear some Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you pronounce it? Beyonce?
That's how you pronounce it. But
let's hear... You know, it's funny because... Remember we tried this? If you ask for 50 Cent... It doesn't know, but if you say 50 cents, please, then it thinks you want to buy stamps or something. It doesn't understand. So I don't know how you ask for 50 cents.
I don't know either.
Anyway, it sounds good. It's a good ambient music player, I guess is what I'm saying. And there's nothing. I listen to music ambiently all the time. But if I want to listen to music like the artist intended, I think it's, in a way, devalues music. Somebody created this. An artist created this. put their heart and sweat and tears into this to make something beautiful for you. And you're washing your dishes while you listen. Don't do that.
Well, someone is probably washing their dishes right now while they're listening to us.
You see what I'm saying?
And I'm totally okay with that.
Will somebody please get this big heavy thing off my lap?
Here.
I can't move.
Oh my goodness.
You didn't know. You didn't there believe it. It's heavy.
I almost dropped it on you. That would have been exciting.
Ow! Our show is every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC. We would love it if you come by and watch us do it live, because things like that happen, which we usually will edit out if there's any damage to either of the hosts during the show. We'll just cut that part out. But if you're one of those people that likes to watch, you know, watches the Indy 500 hoping a car will crash, you should watch the show, because it's like that.
Yep.
You never know what horrible things are going to happen. You can watch it at twit.tv/live. If you do that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Watch Megan every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. That would be 1700 UTC for iOS today. And then every Thursday with Jason Howell for Tech News Weekly, it's about 2 p.m.
2:30, yep.
2:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern on Thursday afternoons, our weekly Tech News show. And then, of course, whenever you can, I'd love to get you here on the Screensavers. Thank
you. I love being here.
You're an original Screensaver. Mm-hmm.
I'll be back in 2 weeks.
Wow.
I know.
I didn't mean that quick.
No, okay, then great. I won't.
No, please. I insist. You must, because it's your day off. I appreciate you coming in on your day off. If you can't watch live, we have on-demand versions of everything we do available at the website, in this case, twit.tv/NSS. Or you can find your favorite podcatcher and subscribe. That's the best way. Podcasts, the podcast app on your phone, iTunes, Pocket Cast, Overcast. It's heavy, right, Jerry?
It is heavy.
That's a very heavy thing.
Instead of hats on iOS today, we should just
wear
put heavy
big
things.
Metal plates.
Yeah, or I was going to say have
we
heavy things.
We should try to walk
lungs.
Around with weights.
Yes.
Yes. Is there anything else to say? We're done with the survey, right? No, we still want people to do it? All right, twit.tv/survey. This really is kind of the end, though, I think. Once a year, we ask to get to know a little bit about people who listen to the show. We want to understand what you listen to, how you listen to it. It helps us make better programming for you. It helps us with our advertisers, too, because they always are saying, well, who listens? And now we can say, well, this guy. No, we don't say you particularly, not this guy, but these people, this large group of an aggregate of people. I think that's it.
Flash briefing. That's now everywhere.
U.S., Canada, India, Australia. If you have an Amazon Echo device, don't forget to go into the app, look at the flash briefing, and add Twit, because we do little bits of this show and all of the shows in there, and that's kind of a fun way to start your day. Finally, I guess the last thing to say is get our newsletter, because Jerry works really hard on that, twit.tv/newsletter. You'll get it every Sunday or Monday, and it'll give you a look ahead at what's coming up this week on Twit. We've got some big stuff coming up, including a trip to Austin, Texas, for South by Southwest. Stacey Higginbotham and I are going to lead a panel at the Capitol One House at Anton's Bar on Thursday, March 9th. It's early, 8:30 a.m., but Taco Deli will be providing the breakfast tacos. So come by. You don't need to be a South by Southwest badge holder to join us. March 9th in Austin, 8:30 a.m. That'll be a lot of fun. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye. There's a picture of me through my cabinet.